The rabbis tell us that when God came to create man, so he said, Na'aseh Adam, let us make man. And Chazal say, who is the us? They say that the Ribbono Shel Olam asked advice from the angels, whether he should create man or not. To teach us, God doesn't need advice, but to teach us that even a great person should ask advice from a lesser person. Advice is very important to ask, and not only ask from greater people, then you even ask from lesser people. That's also important. Now, there's two problems here. One is, what is the value of asking advice from somebody who knows less than you? Okay, and if it's just to make them feel good, that's very condescending, because the person's going to know that you really don't need to ask their advice. The example I always love to give is the following. I know a little bit about cars, only the kinds of cars I have owned. You have to know something about fixing cars or whatever. So I have an idea at least how a motor works, what the parts are, and if I hear a noise, I usually can discern what the problem is, and sometimes even take care of it. But if I want to be nice, and my mother-in-law, who knows how to get into a car, basically, but that there's something under the hood, I'm sure she has not too much of an idea what it all is about. And I hear a noise in my motor, and I say to my mother-in-law, Ma, what do you think that noise is? Right? Do you have any advice of what I should do about it? That's ridiculous. Right? What in the world is her advice going to help me? Right? I know more about car motors than she does. So, Elamai, I want to make her feel good that I asked her advice. She's going to know that it's very condescending and it's false, and she's going to feel even worse. So what is this idea of asking advice from someone who knows less than you, someone on a lower level than you? What's the purpose of it? What does the Ribbono Shel Olam teach us? Another problem is, okay, God asked advice already. So what was he told? He asked the angels, should I create man or not? So there basically were three angels involved. Tzedek, Enes, and Shalom. Shalom said, don't create man. All he does is quarrel and fight. Right? There is no Shalom. Without people, there's a lot more Shalom. Don't create man. Tzedek said, create man. Man does a lot of chesed. People do kindnesses one to the other. I think that man should be created. Enes said, forget it. Man, there is no truth in this world. Okay, so that's two against one. He asked three people advice. Two of them said, don't create it. So what should God have done? Not created man. What did God do? He threw Enes to the ground, right? And then he created man. So what did God teach us? You should ask advice, but don't follow the advice that you get. That doesn't make sense either. Or, he taught us a different lesson, which is how most people ask advice. They keep asking till someone tells them what they want to hear, and then they say, oh, I asked advice. So God asked three angels. Two of them said no. One said yes. He said, oh, that's the one I want to listen to. So what does it mean? Right? I'm both on the asking the advice and on the listening to the advice. It doesn't seem that this lesson is understood. What does this have to do with prophecy? There's a very deep explanation of what that means. That he threw Emes to the ground. Emes me eretz titzmach. Then the Emes grew from the ground or whatever. But I don't want to go into that right now. It's not really relevant to what we're going to speak about. And I only have a few minutes left to get this topic across.
Is it relevant for me to understand where did the angels come from? Who created them?
God created them on the first or second day of creation.
It didn't say so, though, did it?
Did it say in the Torah? No, openly not. Okay. You're right, whoever said that. When it says God created Es HaShemayim, the Es HaAretz includes all the things that were in the heavens and all the things that were in the earth. Okay. So let me tell you what the Meiri in Mishle says, two ideas. He says the following. Advice is not only for the sake of getting information. You don't know some information. Somebody else knows more information, therefore you ask advice to get information. That's not the main purpose of advice. It's one purpose. But the purpose of advice is, says the Meiri, every person is biased in what he wants to do rather than what he should be doing. And therefore, if you have a problem, if you have a question that comes up in your life, and you have to make a decision, so normally a person has one side of that decision that he wants. Whether it's good, bad, right, wrong, it's irrelevant. That's what he wants to be right. That's what he really wants to do. But it may not be the best thing. It may not be the right decision. So if he is going to decide on his own without asking anybody's advice, he is going to see things according to his bias. And when you see things according to your bias and your subjectivity, you see them distorted. You see what you want to see. And what's going to happen is that the person is going to see the issue that he has to make a decision about in a totally distorted way, and then the decision is going to be made in a very distorted way, and what he decides to do is not necessarily going to be what's best for him, for others, what's right, but what he really deep down wants. People see what they want to see. The second thing the Meiri says is, even if you're not going to see things distorted, you know what you'll do? When you have to make a decision, so you weigh out the pros and the cons of all the different options that you have. And then you decide, based on that, what is more positive, what's more negative, and then you do what's more positive. Every issue has many pros and many cons to it. But if you have a bias, you have a subjectivity, you really want one side of that decision to be, because that's what you really want. But that doesn't necessarily mean that objectively that's the best thing. You're going to see all the positive sides of the side you want and all the negative sides of the side you don't want. You're not going to see the negatives of what you really want, and you're not going to see the positives of what you really don't want. And then you're going to think, I made an objective decision. I weighed all the positives and all the negatives, and this is really what I should be doing. When in fact, you weighed all the positives that you saw, but you saw only the positives of the side you wanted initially, and you saw only the negatives of the side you didn't want. And this is all subconscious. This is conscious and subconscious. Therefore, a person needs to ask advice even from someone lesser. Even somebody doesn't know the information. We're not talking here about asking advice of information. Information, you ask somebody who has the information. But we're talking about asking advice from someone who can be objective, who can give you an objective, real view of the issue at hand and show you all the positive sides and the negative sides of both parts, the ones you want and the ones you don't want. And then you, after seeing the issue in its objective, non-distorted form, then you can make a choice. The advice is not necessarily to make the choice for you. You go to even ask a God will be Israel. He doesn't tell you what to do most of the time. He tells you and presents to you what the various sides are objectively. And then he gives you the option. Now make the choice. Now it should be obvious what the choice should be, but it's your choice. He's not making choices for you. He's laying out the issue in a way that perhaps you wouldn't have seen, either because there are areas that you wouldn't have understood, or because of your bias and subjectivity, you would have seen them either distorted, or you wouldn't have seen them in their total perspective. I just wanted to say that that's why giving advice or not giving advice is a function of the prohibition in the Torah, lifnei iver lo siten michshol. Don't put a stumbling block in front of the blind. Not giving someone good advice, you transgress that prohibition. Not just if you give him bad advice. I understand if you give him bad advice, you're putting a stumbling block in front of him by giving him advice that he's going to stumble on and he's unaware of it, that he's a blind person. But if you don't give him any advice, where did you put the stumbling block? But the idea is that a person who gets no advice, who only functions according to his perception, inevitably his perception is biased, subjective and distorted. So you, by not giving him advice, are also putting a stumbling block in front of someone who's blind. He's blinded. The Rambam says an interesting thing. There's another prohibition that stems from this lifnei iver lo siten michshol. Don't put a stumbling block in front of the blind. Don't help someone commit a sin that he couldn't have done without you. Somebody wants to eat treif. but he doesn't have any money to buy it, or he can't get to it, and you can provide him with it. So he asks you, can you provide me with something, trade? And he couldn't have gotten it without you. If you give him that, you're putting a stumbling block in front of the blind. Says the Rambam, why is a person who wants to sin called blind? Says the Rambam, Shetayvis libo ma'avrin es eimav einav miliro seso emes. The desires of his heart blind his eyes from seeing the truth. A person who follows his desires blindly is a blind person. His eyes are being blind from seeing what really is the case. His subjectivity, his bias, his desires blind his eyes, that if he would not have that desire, he'd see clearly that it's not something that's wrong. But because he has the desire, it blinds, distorts his eyes. So he's a blind person. The Chazal say that the organ of the body that is the advisor, where a person gets advice, and we're not talking about the physical organ, we're talking about the spiritual counterpart to that physical organ. Person has a physical body, but the physical body has a spiritual counterpart to every part of the body. It's the heart that reasons and that feels. It's not the physical heart. The physical heart is a pump. But it's a spiritual counterpart to the heart, and so on with all the different organs. The organ that represents advice is the kidneys. Kloios yoatzos. You have two kidneys, right? And that doesn't mean somebody who had one kidney taken out only has good or bad advice. That doesn't mean that. It's again, that's a physical part. There's a spiritual counterpart. It doesn't depend necessarily on the physical thing being there or not. It's a spiritual counterpart. But it fits very nicely. What is the function of the kidneys? There's a pasuk in Mishlei. The pasuk says, Mayim amukim eitza b'levish, v'ish tvunos yidlena. Advice, what to do, is really innate in a person. It's like deep water. The water exists. It's deep water, but you need somebody wise to be able to access it. Advice, everybody knows deep down what's right to do. Deep down, everybody knows in every situation what's right. But you need to be able to access it. Because until that water comes to the surface, it could get mixed with a lot of poisons, with a lot of things that distort it and make it not pure water. So what do you need to get advice? You need kidneys. What do the kidneys do? They filter out the poisons and leave the water pure. So if Eitza, if advice, if knowing what to do is like pure water, then the way to get to that pure water is to distill it and filter it from all of the bias and all of the subjectivity. So therefore, the idea of the kidneys being the source of advice is very, very nice, because it fits very nice with the function of the physical kidneys to be able to filter out the poisons and leave that water for the body. So too, advice filters out the subjectivity and the bias and those poisons and leaves the Eitzah to be pure water. It's interesting also that the rabbis question why God said, let us make man, because it's misleading. It seems to imply there's more than one God. And in fact, the Christians bring a proof from here to the Trinity that there's more than one God. Let us make man. So the Medrash says that when God dictated this pasuk to Moshe Rabbeinu, so Moshe Rabbeinu said, I can't write that, because you're giving a place for the minim, the apikorsim, the heretics, to make a mistake. And I told you, the Christians talk about bring the proof from here. So God told Moshe Rabbeinu, Ksov, you write, the harotza litos yiteh. The one who wants to make a mistake will make a mistake. So it seems like God is totally insensitive to causing people to make mistakes. Whoever wants to make a mistake will make a mistake. It's not my business. And that's why God commanded us not to do such a thing. That's a stumbling block. Exactly. The answer the Bali Musar say is the following. No one ever became an apikoros because it says Nasa Adam. Because in the end of the sentence it says Vayas Elokim in the singular. And if you look at Rashi, he says what I told you. God asked advice from the angels. Nobody, no first grader, seventh grader, adult, ever, let's go learn this pasuk, got up and said, I got to go join the convent down the street because it says Nasa Adam. Never happened in the history of the world. But I'll be coarse and bring a proof from here. Meaning what? If you want to see things properly, this isn't going to make you an apikoros. But if you want to make a mistake, then whether it's said nasa or esa, it makes no difference. People can distort anything to bring proof to what they want. Once you want to be an apikoros, once you want harotza vitos, you want to make a mistake, you'll find proof everywhere you look, right, and distort and convolt anything you want. So God says, it's not going to help. I'd rather teach the lesson here, to ask advice and be objective, and that will solve the problem, than to take away the nasa for people who are going to use it the wrong way. They'll use anything the wrong way. If they want to make a mistake, they're not going to make the mistake because it says nasa adam. But if they want to make the mistake, I don't have to say nasa adam, it doesn't say esa adam, they'll find ways to make a mistake. I once used to stay, what's it called, Venazman in Sukkis, when I was unmarried and in yeshiva already in Cleveland. So I didn't go back to Miami, I went to New York. I stayed by a Rav, Rabbi Wasserman. And so he once got a letter on Sukkis from a Goy who thought he was Mashiach. At that time it was Goyim who thought they were Mashiach. But in any case, so it was a Goy who thought he was Mashiach. And he wanted to convince the world to believe in him as Mashiach. But he couldn't get to the world. There was no internet at the time and email, so it was hard to get to the world. So he decided it would be much more inexpensive for him if he wrote letters to all of the clergymen in New York, priests, rabbis, ministers, and he convinced them that he's Mashiach, and then they would go and convince their congregations, so with one person he would have hundreds of people convinced. So this rabbi got the letter, could you please convince your congregation that I'm Mashiach, and I'm giving you 10 proofs, conclusive proofs that I'm Mashiach. Unfortunately, I don't remember all of them. I remember the first one, and the other ones weren't any better. They were all along the same lines. It says in Yeshayahu that Mashiach, one of the distinctions of Mashiach will be Shiyia l'mala mimalachim. He will be above kings, literally, above kings. So he said, in the apartment underneath me, there are two dogs named King. Which puts me above kings. Now that's clear that Yeshayahu was referring to me, that I'm Mashiach, because I am definitely above kings. Harotze litos yitek. A person who wants to make a mistake will find anything to distort, doesn't have to say nasa adam, it could say esa adam, he'll find a way to distort it and make what he wants. Yeah. Who do you say? Yeah, okay, that's a different question, but it's not for now. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's a question. We'll leave it for now. Okay. In any case, sometimes also it's important to ask advice even if you have no choice. You have to do one way. You have no, it's not a question, advice to do this way, to do that way. You're forced to do one way. Still there's an idea to ask advice. Because advice is not just to guide you what to do, but how to do it also. Because the intention can make all the difference in the world. And if you do something with one intention, right, as opposed to a different intention, you could do, two people could do the exact same thing. One will get rewarded for it, one will get punished for it. An example. This applies more to men, but I think women here could relate to it too. You want to be Yotze Kriyas HaTorah. Okay, you have a Bal Koreh who may make mistakes. So if he makes mistakes, you have to correct them. Especially if the people at the Bima don't catch him. Okay. So the Bal Koreh, if he makes a mistake and you don't catch it, you may not fulfill the mitzvah of hearing Kriyas HaTorah. Two people get up Shabbos morning. One says, I hope the Bal Koreh makes no mistakes this week because I want to fulfill the mitzvah of reading the Torah. But if he does make a mistake, I'm going to have to correct him. And he goes to shul with that in mind. The other person gets up in the morning and says, oh wow, the guy I really don't like is laning this week. I hope he makes a lot of mistakes so I can really embarrass him publicly and show him up. And he goes to shul. And then the Bal Koreh lanes and he makes a few mistakes and both of them shout out to correct him. The first guy is going to get a mitzvah for fulfilling the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah. And the second guy is going to get Gehenim for insulting that Bal Koreh publicly. Why? Only because of the intention. The first guy's intention was to fulfill the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah. That's what he did. The second guy's intention was to insult the Bal Koreh and to use Kriyas HaTorah as a means to insult the Bal Koreh. So he's over the issur of insulting him publicly. Even though both of them basically are doing the exact same thing, the intention is different. And therefore it's important to ask advice, even if you know what you have to do, even if you have no choice. But Lamaisa, how you do it, with what intention you do it, is also very important. Okay. Now, the however, asking advice and giving advice are two sides of the same coin. The Gemara says that any malchus that doesn't have advisors, any king who doesn't have advisors isn't a king. You need advisors. At the same time, kings are advisors. Ein malachim ela etzos. So a king is an advisor, but he has to know how to take advice too. If you don't know how to take advice, right, then you can't know how to give advice. They go hand in hand. And here comes the crux of the thing. Not everybody is capable of giving advice. Not because you don't know. Because like we said, advice that we're talking about is not information. It's being able to see a non-biased, unbiased, objective view of what your situation is. Good social workers, good psychiatrists, psychologists, right, don't basically tell people what to do. But they give them the chance to see their problem, to see their issue in an objective way. So that it's clear to them what they have to do. The thing is like this. If somebody comes to me for advice, and I say, what would I do if I were presented with this problem? Then my advice is worthless and maybe worse. Because what difference does it make what I would do? I'm not that person. I don't have his situation. I don't have his, what's it called, circumstances. And I have my own bias. So if I imagine what I would do in such a situation, I'm just giving him my bias in my decision. Not his. So what did I benefit him? What I have to say is, if I were him, with his specific situation, what would I do? Right? Somebody comes to me and wants to know how much money should he spend on his daughter's chasana, and he is poor, doesn't have enough money to buy the next piece of bread for his family, but I'm a rich man. So I said, well, what would I spend if I had this problem, right? Who knows what I would do? I'm rich. He's poor. I have to put myself in his shoes. If I wouldn't have enough money for the next piece of bread, I'd make a different kind of chasana I would make if I'm doing it for myself. I have to give him advice according to his situation, not mine. And I have to be able to divest myself of my bias to give him a thing. So therefore, there's a very big difference between saying, what would I do if I had that problem? Or, if I were him, what would I do? The second way is advice. The first way is not advice at all. It's not bad advice, it's not advice. I didn't give him any advice. I gave him what appeared to be advice, but it's not really advice. Therefore, you can understand the following medrash. The medrash says that Nodav and Aviyu, each one on their own, decided to go and bring a sacrifice, bring some incense in an improper way. They both made independently that decision. The rabbis say that one of the sins they committed, why they were punished, was shelo natlu etzos emizeh. They didn't ask advice one from the other. Now I understand, the rabbis also say they didn't ask advice from Moshe, from Aaron, their father. I understand that. If they would have asked Moshe, Moshe would have told me doing something wrong. They would have asked Aaron, he would have told them. But what would it help to ask each other? Each one independently decided to do what they did. So if Nadav's going to ask Aviyu, what's going to help? Aviyu said, yeah, I made the same decision. But you know what would help? Because when Nadav says, what do I think is right to do? He sees it with his bias and he decided to do it. But if Aviyu would have asked Nadav, what do you think I should do? You know what Nadav would have said? He would have said, if I was Aviyu without his bias, what would I do? And then he would have seen it objectively, he would have realized it's not something to do. And the opposite is also true. They would have been able to divest themselves of their bias, then they would have seen that what they planned to do wasn't right. They only saw what they were planned to do was right because they did it with their own subjectivity and bias. Had they been asked advice from the other one and they put themselves in the other one's place without their subjectivity, then they would have been able to see it in its proper perspective and they wouldn't have done it. Neither of them would have done it. In any case, one second. Therefore, when God asked the angels, he did it to teach us that even a great person, this didn't apply to God, but he did it to teach us this lesson. Even a great person has to ask someone lesser than them, because only if you ask someone else who can put themselves in your place without your bias can you get an unbiased, objective view of what you have to do, and then you possibly could do it right. If you don't do that, you're going to see things totally subjective with your bias. You're going to see it distorted. You're not going to see it properly. Now, when the angels gave the advice, they ended up not giving any advice at all. Because what did each angel say? They didn't give advice putting themselves in God's place. If I were God, what would I tell God to do? What did they say? I'm tzedek. From a tzedek perspective, I think this is what should be. So they gave the advice based on their subjectivity. Emes said, as Emes, how would I look at this problem? But God's not asking you as Emes. He's asking you as God. Put yourself in his position. So when the angels gave advice, in fact, they gave no advice. They gave their own subjective view of the thing. That's not advice. So God ignored it. Had they given advice, God may have listened to it. But it's not that they gave God bad advice or advice he didn't want to hear. They didn't give him advice. It's like the rich man telling the poor man to make a chasen that befits a rich man, which is right for him, but it's not right for the poor man. So he didn't give me any advice. There's nothing to listen to over here. It's not they ignored his advice. He didn't give me any advice. He told me what he would do. What do I care what he would do? I know what I would do too, but that's with subjectivity. What do I need his subjectivity for? I need somebody to tell me something that's objective, not subjective. So when the angels gave the advice, so they gave it in a way that was totally subjective, totally according to their look. There's no advice in that. Therefore, the Rebbe Moshe didn't listen to them. And he taught us a lesson. That kind of advice is not advice at all. Don't make them, don't think you had advice. Hold on a second. Okay. Now, people who do give good advice, and this is called, Chazal say, Hizor me'odam shenosim l'cho etzo l'fi darko. Be very careful from a person who gives you advice according to his way. That doesn't mean he gives you bad advice, because the Shari Tshuva, Rabbeinu Yonah, says that there's a special prohibition giving bad advice and also giving advice according to his way. It means that it's not bad advice, it's not advice at all. Because if someone advises you according to his subjectivity, even though he means well for you, he hasn't benefited you anything. He hasn't given you an objective view of what you asked him about. And giving good advice is a kiyum of gemilas chasad, and the Tzeres Yisrael says you can do chesed with your body, you can do it with your mind and your mouth also by giving good advice and thinking about it. The Chafetz Chaim says not only is there a mitzvah to give good advice, but whenever you help a person in other things, you give them a loan, you give them tzedakah, give them advice how to use the tzedakah properly. You give them a loan, give them advice how to use the loan properly. Along with every other kind of chesed, ashrei maskil eldal. When you give him, you know a person doesn't know how to organize his budget or whatever, you give him a loan, he's just going to get more in debt. But if you give him advice how to use the loan properly, how to invest it, how to use it or whatever, then you've really given him a chesed. Then the loan is really a positive thing. The Rambam says also this is a kiyum of lev tov, a good heart. Is also part of that is giving people good advice. You also transgress a prohibition with ne'ivr lo sitei nichsol if you don't give advice and you're capable of doing it, or you give bad advice, and there's a special klala, a special curse, orer mash ge'ivr badera. Cursed is the person who gives people bad advice or refuses to give them good advice. In addition, even when we advise somebody to do a mitzvah, we do it in a way that makes sense for them. The Gemara says by Yibum, somebody dies without children, leaves the wife without children, so they either have to marry the brother-in-law, or they make chalitza. So, the Gemara says, if it's two young people, who the marriage will be a good marriage, so we advise them to get married. If it's an old man and a young woman or vice versa, we tell them this is not going to work out. Best thing to give chalitza. So, in addition to advising on the mitzvah, we advise them the best way to do the mitzvah. That's also an idea of advice. Also, there's a prohibition, lo sonu ish etzachid. Don't harm people and hurt them and deceive them. It's also an idea of not giving them bad advice, or giving them advice that's good for you and bad for them, or subjective advice. And therefore, it is no wonder that when we say vidui, we confess our sins, 1/22 of the confession is your actual raw. I gave bad advice. It's not only social workers, psychiatrists, psychologists that are required to give advice. Every Jew, if he's capable, is required to give advice to other people. Most people abuse that and give advice all the time on things they're not capable of doing or don't have any idea about. But when you know what you're talking about and you're capable of giving good advice, a mitzvah. And therefore, Chazal said, the Pasuk says in Mishlei, Tshuva Barov Yoet, that salvation comes with asking a lot of advice, and Marba Eitza, Marba Tvuna. The more advice a person asks, the more wisdom he has. So that is, and therefore when there were Nevi'im, we went to the Nevi'im for advice. And then we got God's advice. Today, there are no Nevi'im, so you go at least to people that can divest themselves of their subjectivity and give you advice in an objective manner. Okay, let's just, Okay, that was a very weighted if. If I could stay here longer, I'd be happy to, except I have another class and another class and another class after that. Okay, I can't take questions now because I really want to do something here. Yeah, what?
At the beginning you said that every person is biased, whether they realize it or
right.
They don't realize. So how can they divest?
Everybody is biased when it comes to things for themselves. They're biased for themselves. But when nogea to you, right, I can divest myself of my bias if it has nothing to do with me. Right, so the Rebbe may be biased when it comes to his problems, but he's not biased when it comes to your problems. Right, there he can be objective. So if he puts himself in your shoes, he's you without your bias. Okay, yeah. The question may be real quick, yeah. Yes and no, except the rabbis say the two kidneys, one represents the Yetzer Hara and one the Yetzer HaTov. You're always getting two opinions. One is the negative one and one's the positive one.